I'm John Batchelor, Hotel Mars Episode N, my colleague and co-host David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. We look at Mars as an opportunity for all of us, for the civilization, for the lander on Mars, the rovers on Mars, and next up, a spacecraft that could contain humans on Mars, and then maybe humans on Mars. However, there's another planet near at hand, and that planet is unexplored. Minimum information coming from the planet Venus. David, we move immediately to someone who's written about and proposed to NASA and has wonderful thoughts about what we can do to gather information from our near-at-hand twin, Venus, Jeffrey Landis. He's a scientist. He works with NASA. He's also a fiction writer who uses science. He's won the Nebula Award, and if you understand science fiction, that is the pinnacle. He's also won the Robert A. Heinlein Award for Outstanding Published Works in Science Fiction. Jeff, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show. Your lengthy list of publications. I want to go immediately to your work on Venus. And the speculation, all of us, is that Venus is the place to go. I'm going to divide it into two pieces. The first is the clouds of Venus. What is there that makes it attractive, Jeff? And how can we explore it? How could we prosper in the clouds of Venus? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and it's fun to be here. Yeah, I'm always glad to talk about Venus. Venus is very much the underexplored planet. It's not completely unexplored. We have sent missions there. But my, we certainly have a lot more to learn about it. It is in many ways Earth's twin. You might call it Earth's evil twin, but it's very, very Earth-like, especially compared to some of the other planets.
How can we take advantage of the clouds, Jeff?
Well, one of the things that strikes me as I study Venus and look at what we know about it, when people talk about Venus, they often talk about the surface. And they say, wow, the surface of Venus is a good analog for hell. It's high pressure, high temperature high enough to melt lead on the surface. But like the Earth, as you get higher in the atmosphere, the temperature gets cooler. And surprisingly for Venus, where you get up to the altitude where the air pressure gets very Earth-like, what you discover is the temperature also gets very Earth-like. So there's a layer in the clouds of Venus, give or take about 55 kilometers above the surface, which is a very Earth-like environment. It has a temperature similar to Earth, and it has a pressure that's actually very close to Earth pressure. So I call this the most Earth-like environment in the solar system, with the exception, of course, of the surface of the Earth.
David?
Jeff, at this location, this sweet spot, are there radiation issues like we would have on the surface of Mars, for example, or are we shielded from radiation?
Well, Earth does have shielding from radiation of two types. We're shielded by the atmosphere, about 10 tons per square meter of atmosphere. Earth is also shielded by the radiation belts, or more specifically, by the magnetic fields that confine the radiation belt. Earth has a magnetic field, but Venus doesn't. So on Venus, we don't have that shielding by the magnetic field. But we do have shielding by atmosphere. Even at this altitude above Venus's surface, we still have tons per square meter of shielding from the atmosphere. So we don't have that ferocious radiation environment that you can get with galactic cosmic rays and solar coronal mass ejections. You do get quite a bit of shielding on Venus, and that's quite different from Mars. Mars is a very, very thin atmosphere that gives only minimal shielding against radiation.
You have imagined a floating city or a floating colony at this sweet spot, as David says. But the winds of Venus, how will it work? How does the colony sustain itself in this good environment, but still it's being whipped around at a great rate, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. That's one of the interesting things about Venus. In fact, one of the things that in many ways is even fascinating. Although on the surface, the winds are not very fast. They're very gentle winds on the surface. When you get up to high altitudes, the wind of Venus moves at hundreds of miles an hour around the planet. In fact, at the altitudes at which I'm saying that we should put these floating cities, the wind of Venus goes around the planet in 4 days. But in some sense, that's actually kind of a benefit to the floating cities, because Venus rotates so slowly that if we were on the surface of Venus, if we could see the sun at all, and of course you can't see the sun on Venus because it's cloudy all the time, but if you could see the sun from the surface, it would take 100 days for the sun to cross the sky. But up at the level where you can put the floating cities, the wind will actually carry them around the planet. So you'll get essentially about 2 days of light and then 2 days of darkness as you go around the planet.
David?
What would people be doing there? And I know you're supporting these cities with huge, giant balloons. So what do the people do if you actually got humans in a cloud city?
Well, what do humans do anywhere? Humans would do the same things that they would do in, say, New York or any cities anywhere. It would be a place that you could make, actually not one city, but you could make hundreds of cities if you wanted to. It would be a whole planet that you could put settlements on.
Prosperity, though, Jeff, is there, we've talked about mining. Is there anything in the clouds that we can use to manufacture? Anything rare? Are we looking at a Club Med in Venus?
Well, in the clouds themselves, there are some resources that we would want to use. Of course, the most notable resource is the carbon dioxide, mm-hmm. which we would use to make the oxygen that we would both breathe and also float. For the other materials, for the more rare minerals, you probably would have to go down to the surface.
We're going to do that. We're going to go down to the surface. I just wanted to make sure at the surface. One more detail about these floating cities. A floating probe would also work, wouldn't it, Dr. Lamb?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. In fact, I said that Venus is the underexplored planet, but it's not completely unexplored. And in fact, the Russians back in, 1986, floated balloons in the atmosphere of Venus.
And that would work now. We could learn a good deal more about Venus if we put a mission into that area that you're talking about above the surface. What'd you say? It was about 55 miles high?
About 55 kilometers.
55 kilometers.
Give or take.
And is NASA aware of this? There have been a number of proposals to NASA. Is one of them to float a probe into that area?
A lot of people have been making proposals to do more exploration of Venus, including NASA proposals. So far, other missions have had higher priority. Right. Most recently, the Discovery mission proposals. They just got beat out. Turns out there was some very exciting asteroid missions that just won the competition for the next science mission. But there are indeed people who are proposing trying to do upcoming missions to both the surface and the clouds of Venus.
All right, we're going to go to the surface next. David, let's go down to the surface with Dr. Landis. This is Jeff Landis, who is a fiction writer using science and an award-winning fiction writer using science, as well as an advisor and visionary for NASA these many years. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars. When we come back, the surface of Venus. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. Dr. David Livingston is with me of The Space Show, and we're having a conversation about Venus, the underexplored, as the doctor says, the underexplored inner solar system planet, made of much of the same material we think of Earth. It's what we need. We need a lander returner. We need something down there. We need to get a piece of the rock. We need to understand what's underneath that cloud mantle. We know that there's heat. And Jeff, you have a proposal to NASA for an exploratory vehicle on the surface of Venus, something similar to what Curiosity and Oppy and Spirit have done on the surface of Mars, but yours includes a wind sail. What is the surface of Venus like? How could we survive it down there, given the heat?
The surface of Venus is a ferociously hostile environment. And part of that is the heat, of course. At 450 degrees Celsius, it's hot enough to melt lead. But it's not merely the heat, it's also high pressure. So it has a pressure about 90 times the atmospheric pressure of Earth. That's like the pressure about a kilometer under the ocean. So it's both hot and high pressure. And worse than that, it's cloudy all the time.
Right.
So that's a real hard environment to make a probe to work in. And we don't want to just make a probe, especially we don't want something that would last for an hour or so before it degrades from the heat. We'd like to make a probe to Venus that could operate as well and operate as long as the probes that we've done to Mars. We'd like to be able to rove across the surface, to drive across the surface. Well, one of the problems with driving, of course, is it takes power to drive. You've got to have an engine in your car. So I was giving that a lot of thought. We've been trying to do a lot of analysis to the question, how could we really explore the surface of Venus despite the high temperatures? And we have some good approaches to make electronics that would work on the surface of Venus. But we wanted an approach to drive across the surface of Venus that doesn't take a powerful engine, that we don't necessarily have the power source for. And my thinking on that was, well, let's use the resources that Venus gives us. And the one resource that Venus has is an atmosphere. It has that thick atmosphere. So our thinking was we could use that atmosphere and give the rover a sail. So instead of driving across Venus using a motor, we would actually use a propulsion with a sail. So we'd be a land sailor on the planet Venus.
And what is the wind at surface at 0 feet above whatever it's called, the ocean?
Yeah, the wind at the surface of Venus actually gets very calm, and that would be a problem, except, of course, the atmosphere of Venus is so dense that even a relatively gentle breeze on Venus has a moderate amount of force behind it.
Okay.
We only have a handful of measurements of the wind speed on Venus. We have some measurements from the Russian probes that landed on the surface and measured, among other things, gave us measurements of wind speeds. And that tells us that the wind speed is, oh, give or take about a meter per second. Call it 3 feet per second, give or take. And on Earth, we would call that a very, very gentle breeze. But on Venus, with 90 times the atmospheric pressure of the Earth, that's enough. That's enough that we could use that breeze to sail around, to drive on Venus.
David?
Jeff, is the surface of Venus manageable by some kind of rover? And how do you communicate with it through that atmosphere?
Yeah, the navigation on the surface is going to depend on where you land. And Venus, of course, is an entire world. It has lots of different terrain. It has high mountains, that has some very rugged, chaotic terrain. But it also has some places that are remarkably flat. There's places on Venus where we should be able to drive for miles and miles, maybe even hundreds of miles, without having to go over some bad terrain. So we think that that shouldn't be a problem. Communications, of course, requires electronics. You can't communicate without a radio or some sort of long-distance communicator. But our analysis of electronics using silicon carbide tells us that we should be able to build radios that don't use conventional silicon transistors, but use silicon carbide or perhaps gallium nitride transistors. And these will continue to work even at the Venus temperature. So we're demonstrating that you can make electronics that works. We're demonstrating that you can make a radio that would allow you to communicate all the way from the surface of Venus.
Is this something you would combine with a sky probe as well, a dyad, something in the something in the sky and something on the surface that would talk to each other and communicate back? Or are these separate missions, Jeff?
Wow, you're really mirroring a lot of my thinking. That was our very original plan, is we were thinking, well, maybe we can put a rover on the surface and put an airplane up in that sweet spot in the atmosphere,
right,
about 50 to 60 kilometers above the surface. And that way we could put all the sophisticated electronics in the airplane overhead and then have the rover on the surface be essentially a very simple rover. It just has the radio and the science information. And that was one of our very first proposals for Venus. Lately, we're thinking, well, perhaps we'll put the sophisticated electronics into a communications relay satellite that's overhead. Mostly just because, well, that's a known technology. We know how to make communication satellites. That part should be pretty easy.
David?
The fact that it's only 5 months away from Earth, is that a big asset that you can use, or is it really only significant if you want to get people to Venus?
It helps a little bit because it is in closer to the sun. It's faster to get there because you were kind of, it's a downhill journey to get to Venus. And there's always some advantage to getting there quickly.
The fate of the Russian probe, what killed it? What destroyed it? Was the pressure? Was it the heat? Do we know, Jeff?
Well, I hate to say we don't know for sure. The heat is certainly going to destroy the missions. Most of the Russian probes actually, because they knew that they weren't going to last forever, they were battery powered. So they also were running out of battery at the same time that they were heating up. And at the same time, their relay spacecraft was flying out of range. So all three of those things happened sort of simultaneously. They ran out of power, they started overheating, and the relay satellite got out of range.
Dr. Jeffrey Landis of NASA, a fiction writer using science, a Nebula Award winner, Robert A. Heinlein Award winner, David Livingston, Dr. Space of the space show Venus. It is close, it is a mystery, and we need a sample return from the surface of Venus to find out where we came from. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.